This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. How often do you think about your soap? Well, if you answered, not much, maybe you should. You see, a lot of what passes for soap in stores is technically not soap, according to the FDA's definition. It's full of lab-created chemicals and detergents because, well, it's cheaper to make. Now, what if you could buy natural soap made from natural ingredients like tallow, palm oil, coconut oil, and scented with essential oils, and for just a little more than you'd pay for grocery store soap? Sterling soap is 100% natural, and with a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne, there's a product and a scent for just about everybody. Check them out for yourself at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLING soap.com.
Looking for the perfect gift for that basketball fan in your life? Well, I've got a book for you. It's called Basketball Now. Newly updated for 2025, it spotlights 50 of the NBA's top stars. Think fast breaks, clutch threes, and buzzer beaters. Captured in stunning photography with sharp, readable analysis. From rising stars to veteran icons, this book is a courtside pass to the game right now. Wrap up a slam dunk this holiday season and pick up your copy of Basketball Now today at your favorite bookseller.
Tonight, we'll go back in time to seasons past when 22 men graced the record fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia on the Sports History Network, in conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150 plus years of football history and memorabilia. You'll find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host, the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular, Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon. He's back from holiday. Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Bob, you must have had some Wheaties this morning. You are on fire, sir. That was great. You rolled off football. You nailed it.
Well, it's because I cut the grass this morning. And I've been exercising all day on the yard. And I'm going to give all I can do for the next 60 minutes to make this yet another phenomenal podcast on football history and memorabilia. But all kidding aside, Joe,
there's a lot of people who just believe you are, you know, every waking moment football. So for people to hear that you actually spend time doing yard work.
And the bottom of my leg here, I have a 5,000 count box that I've been going through. I've been pulling stars out.
Ooh.
But I also pulled out of that box an incredible pull.
Look at that.
In honor of you, Joe.
Beauty.
1989 Tops number 4 record breaker of your favorite player, Mr. Steve Largent.
Yeah.
And I could not in good faith leave that in a common box. I had to pull it out with my stars and semi-stars. Even though here in the North Carolina area, he is not as popular than your side of the country.
Yeah.
There are still people who ask me, and this is no lie, would I have any 1977 Topps Steve Largent rookie cards because they need it to finish their set. And I said, I do know a gentleman who probably has about 10,000 of them.
That story always cracked me up, Bob. Because
they plead with me, can you just get one card in any condition so I can finish the 77 tops?
That cracks me up. I think I've said this. I don't know if I've gone into depth, but when I first got back into collecting in 1999, and I discovered eBay. And I remember my sister gave me a Steve Largent signed card for Christmas in '99, and it lit me off. I mean, I'm sure every collector has a story. You
Oh,
collected
absolutely.
as a kid, stopped doing it, and then something ignited the fire again. Well, my sister
Yeah.
giving me a signed Steve Largent card was my igniter. I remember there was a card show a couple blocks from my house. I went there and he had a Largent card, and I'd never seen one, or I mean I had, but not in 20 years.
Yeah.
But he wanted like $100 for it, and then I somehow stumbled upon this eBay thing, and man, that lit me off. I found these Largent cards, and I just started buying them, and this is before PayPal, so I'd buy them, and I had to have an Excel spreadsheet to track them by number by eBay auction number, when I sent the check, when it cleared the bank, and when I got it back so I could cross it off. I mean, and I was probably buying 10 or 15 Largent cards a week. You could get a raw
Wow.
one in good shape for about $20 on eBay, and I was buying them
Wow.
graded. And at one point, I had 1,000 graded cards, Largent cards. And you've seen that photo where I spread them out once because
Right.
somebody made fun of me. Now, how many of those cards do you have? I'm like, I don't know. Let me take a look. And so I fanned them out and took a photo of it. And that's my very famous, hey, you want to talk about obsession? Here you go.
Right. Right. Wow. And to top all this off, in the past month, I get a package in the mail from Oregon,
With
and
love.
Brenda says, my wife says to me, could that be from Joe? And I said, it has to be, but what would he possibly be sending me? So I open up the package, and sure enough,
Yes.
a graded, and you know how much I love graded cards. I have a graded. What's this? A 7 PSA 7 Joe Largent rookie card. Now, this is the second, actually, the third Largent rookie card I have because I have a ungraded one in my set. I have the Christmas ornament you sent me a few years
Christmas
ago.
ornament.
But then you didn't stop in the package. Send me three more wax packs of the Steve Largent set on top of it. So now I have. And you'll notice in my background, I have the other three. I have three packages of this one, and I have four wax packs now.
And so you could
And
proudly
I'm
display it.
dying to crack it open again and try to make the set because
Sent you three. So you could go after that elusive chase card. You know the chase card in that
Oh,
set
I know. And I don't want to,
is the
discuss it
crotch
on the
card.
show,
It's the crotch card. It's the
but.
equivalent of the F face, Ripken card. It's the 89 Pacific Steve Largent crotch card. And I
Exactly.
also sent you a plastic stand so you could display either the wax pack or the Largent. I was after some real estate on that on that bookcase behind you.
Well, you got it. I get it. I'll put
I know,
the
I see. I
I'll put
love
the
it.
Largent card back up here after the show,
Love
so
it.
the next show you'll see it in
The
prominence.
Christmas ornament, but I forgot that I made Christmas ornaments like 5 years
Yeah.
ago out of Largent cards. My
Yeah.
daughter Kennedy, you saw before the show, was really into crafting, and I was like, hey, let's get rid of some of these PSA one and two
I
Largent
actually have
cards.
that hanging up in my one of my display cases here. I forgot to pull it down, but I forgot to
Every
ship it.
year, our football nerd text thread, goes up with people hanging Steve Largent the Christmas tree. But yeah, we sat there, drilled holes, and ran some lace through it, and put little sticky hearts on it, and that was so fun.
It's cool. That's a nice gift. I appreciated that. I always enjoy, something with that somebody put some thought in and has meaning to them. It's cool. It's a cool thing. But anyways, it's been a long time, Joe. I had to do a few shows
Yes, sir.
without you. I know what
All
the
right.
future. I know what the future looks like when you get a big time contract and you move on from our podcast. But in any event, I'm glad. I'm very happy you're back. And I again appreciate everything you do.
Of course.
I miss our little going back and forth.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
It
guest co-host. So
it's tough. Summer's summer's tough for me. I've two middle-aged kids. I mean, Stacey and I got started a little late, and when summer hits, we take a couple trips, and I totally understand. I mean, every once in a while, you've got to bring in the second string, to finish a game. I didn't know that you post shows up on VFC, once in a while, but I hadn't seen a new one hit there.
Yeah, I did post. We had an audio show with Jared Krause about his new book.
Oh, Jared's great.
Jared wasn't able to get the video going, so we did an audio show. And then I had Jeff Payne and Darren Hayes with their new book on Maroon with the Pop Star.
That would be great. I'm looking forward to that. I bought that book and I took it on my vacation with me to read it. Never opened it. So
You got to read it. Got to read it. Yeah. I have a review of it in the upcoming GG, the summer issue coming out over the next few weeks.
Great.
Discussion on the book itself and all the stuff that went into it. So it was very, very informative, very interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Darren's great. Always good to have Jeff on a show. He knows more about the hobby than most people.
So. And I had the pleasure of being on Darren's show talking about three different champion NFL Packers champions over his, yeah, that series on the NFL championships before the Super Bowl. I know you did one or two. So came out very nice, very interesting. And again, more history preserved.
Well, way to spread your wings and talk about a topic you don't know a lot about, Bob. The Green Bay Packers.
Good. And it was to me, in your case, you spread your wings and you talked about something you didn't know about.
Way to turn that around. I did. Mine was on the 45 Cleveland Rams champions, and I knew Rams had moved to LA because Darren is like, I'm gonna be on the show. I'm like, yeah, sure. I want to talk about it. And he's like, something. Here's three topics. I'm like, okay, that I wouldn't mind knowing about. Loved it, and I learned about the draft of 45. Elroy Hirsch, yeah. and Tom Fears, and I'm like, this is incredible. And then I went out and I bought a Cleveland Rams 1945 championship t-shirt that I like to wear around Cleveland Rams. Well, let me tell you something. Let me drop some football wisdom on you, which people love, obviously.
I'll tell you, a lot of people don't realize the Rams started out in Cleveland. And they ended up moving to Los Angeles type of thing. And then they moved to St. Louis and then they moved back to Los Angeles. So.
Sorry. Yeah. I don't know if I've told you this, but when I was a kid, but my mom, we built a house. My mom allowed us to pick wallpaper. Well, I picked NFL wallpaper. And back then I think there were 28 teams, and Seahawks from the AFC West. So my entire wall was just football helmets and LA Rams, Oakland Raiders. And I'm sorry that they'll always be the LA Rams, Oakland Raiders to me. I don't like seeing teams move around like that. And I think it's tough on fans. I have a good friend who's been a Raiders fan for 30 years. I mean, I'm like, well, they moved from Oakland to LA. Isn't that kind of a betrayal? Yeah, sure. I'm still a Raiders fan. And then when they moved to Vegas, no, still love them. And I'm like, gosh, I mean, you were a fan because they were in Oakland. You lived in Oakland. I mean, now, I don't know. It just seems like a knife in the back for teams to bounce.
Oh, yeah. To me, it is. And it's more of the rent-a-team philosophy. And again,
rent-a-team. I like that.
When the Raiders decided to go to Vegas of all places.
Oh, gosh.
You got to be kidding me. It's just not a comfortable place to play in. And it's not a comfortable area to live in. One or the other. So, I mean, but it's the NFL today is money. That's all it amounts to.
Yep, the Raiders became another attraction on the strip. That's about it. Right. So,
exactly. If anything ever happened to the Packers and they moved, that'd be it for me. I mean, there's no way I can conceptualize the Green Bay Packers other than being a Wisconsin team being in Green Bay. I get the Milwaukee connection. I understand that. Yep. That's part of their history. But if they all of a sudden move to wherever, Forget it. That
And my history as a Seahawk fan, my parents had season tickets growing up. So, I mean, I started going to games when I was like nine. So, there are two teams to me that travel incredibly well, and that is the Raiders and the Packers. Yeah. I mean, when both of those teams would play in the Old Kingdom, I would swear it was an away game. The Raider fans, Packer fans would outnumber us.
Right.
And it was weird. Packer fans were cool because it'd be like, hey, Lambeau sold out. You know, it's a smaller stadium. The line for tickets is huge. So we travel. And, Seattle's a nice town. You roll a vacation on it. I always thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Raiders fans, that tended to be, you know, I'm kind of a hooligan. So I like the Raiders. I love wearing their crap around and causing a ruckus. You know, we called them the battery chuckers. You know, because at games they would throw stuff, and a lot of times you could smuggle a C or a D battery into a stadium and chuck it. So, and I learned they do that at the Raider games too. Later on, I went to a Raider game down in L.A. You know, probably early 2000s, and I'm wearing it's the one place I didn't take my jacket off to expose a Largent jersey underneath.
I believe it.
Yeah, Philly came close. I almost put my jersey back on. 1,000 people chanting asshole at you as you're walking in a game. Philly fans sound great in harmony, yelling asshole. But that was intimidating, but oh well.
I get it. I remember going to a Jets game in the Meadowlands, and I really got them crushed. I had my Bart Starr jersey. And they're screaming at me, whatever. And I'm laughing because, I'm from Connecticut, so I get it. That's
yeah.
So just an incredible experience. The one thing, a visiting fan going to Green Bay will always be treated with respect and nicely. I know the games I went to Green Bay. I remember one tailgate, we were going to Brett Favre's Steakhouse. We had tickets for the pregame. And there were two guys that were playing the Falcons that day, and there were two Falcon fans behind us. We had a nice conversation. We talked about the Falcons, talked about the Packers, and the guys basically commented, "We can't believe how nice we're treated here by everybody from the hotel, the restaurants, even though we're Falcon fans." And I said, "That's the way Green Bay is. It's simple.
Yeah,
So there's a mutual respect. Hey, you try to beat up your opponent for 60 minutes on the gridiron, and then you say a prayer with them after the game. I mean, that type of thing. So, that's football.
I agree.
That's what you got to understand about football. There is a lot of camaraderie, both fan-wise and player-wise, at any level of football, high school, college, and professional. Yep. All right, our special guest is here, and let's move into his segment. Our special guest tonight is a trading card and memorabilia collector of 20-plus years and has long collected Pittsburgh professional sports and the West Virginia Mountaineers. His main collection is Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's currently collecting at least one item of each of the 1,600 members of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's currently searching for programs, photographs, and other items that feature the remaining Steelers needed for his collection. He also runs 304 Collector Corner, a social media account dedicated to preserving the entire history of the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise. At this time, I'd like to welcome to our show tonight, Mr. Ryan Minnick. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Bob and Joe, for having me on. I'm excited to be here and always excited to talk football and the Steelers.
Attaboy.
That's great. I'm going to lead off, Ryan. I'm going to ask, can you please tell our audience how you got interested in collecting football cards, and memorabilia?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually back in 2003, I remember it specifically because of the set. It was baseball cards that really kind of sprung me into collecting. I'm from a very small town originally, so there wasn't a lot of options as far as cards. We had two local hobby shops. But I remember a friend of mine called me and said, "You're never going to believe this, Ryan. I pulled an Alex Rodriguez jersey card from Fleer Ultra Baseball." And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. I couldn't believe that. So I had to go try my hand at it, and I pulled the exact same card, but it was
Hey,
Nomar Garcia
Ryan,
Parra.
real quick here. This is Gridiron Greats. I mean, how much longer are we talking about this baseball thing? Let's get to it. Let's get to it.
So I got to baseball, and then I was like, you know what? Football is my game. Football really is my game.
There
So
you go.
baseball got me into it, but football is really what kept me going and got me to love it. So football has been my first love of a sport ever since I can remember. But you know, baseball cards have been around, but football cards are really what keeps me going.
Nice job putting a bow on that, bringing it back around,
Oh, absolutely.
Ryan. That is a little gag Bob and I have when people talk about what we call it, the little white ball, hitting it with a stick. So, awesome. Impressive. 1,600 members of the Steelers. I love that you've gone back and figured out how many people. I'm curious, like when they had the Steagles, the Steelers and the Eagles, do you count those or is that a no-no?
I do. Because,
Okay.
in my opinion, even though it
Oh,
is a
it is.
combined franchise, it's still people who make up Steelers history. So in that case, you know, that adds guys like Al Wistert and Bucko Kilroy from the Eagles. So in my opinion, that's just adding on to football history. Whether they're known as Steelers or Seagulls for that matter, they're still part of history. So I'm honored to be able to collect them.
Of course, as a Steeler fan, you would take credit for Al Wister. Hey, Bob, final ruling. Do Steagles count as Steelers in the collecting? You're the ultimate say on it.
Well, you know, I've had collectors who are big Eagle collectors that count the Steagles in their side, and then I'm on the opposite side. I've had Steeler collectors saying, you know, they're going to count it in their collections. And I think honestly, in 1943, because it was a combined team, both collectors and both teams should be collecting 1943 Steagles items. Because they were Eagles players and they were Steeler players at the same time. So Ryan, whatever what you're doing with it, I do agree with you because they are part of the history of the Steelers because they were combined that year. And what makes I think that whole World War II era so unique, there's so little that survived it. You know, you're going to have a really tough time finding anything from 1943 to represent that player.
I
Possibly
agree.
a program, possibly a ticket stub. Few, if any, photos exist, and there's not that many magazines out there where you can, you know, pull an article out of the magazine like a Street and Smith or whatever, that features that player type of thing. So
All right.
that's super tough for your collection.
Ryan, the equivalent of the football Supreme Court has spoken. Bob, so you're good to go. So you tell us about your Steelers rookie card collection. I mean, in your 1,600 members, you're after the 1,600 people who've played for the Steelers. Are you after rookie cards, or are you after, if you get a rookie card, does that count as one of the 1,600?
Yeah, so to your point about making the list, I actually went back and made an all-time roster of every single Steeler ever. And then basically went back and then cross-referenced them with Beckett and Trading Card Database and said, these are the guys that have cards. So I had a list first of all of the players who had cards. And then actually just recently within the last year said, I can get something of everybody, right? There's got to be something out there. Program, a photo, a ticket stub of a game, something that represents these other guys. So the cards are still my main collection. But when it comes to the programs and other things, I have some items here that I'll show too.
Okay.
But it really is card focused, but memorabilia has been a part of it for the last year now.
Totally. And I can see you hitting a roadblock there. As you were talking, I'm like, boy, back in the football card that, the 70s and 80s, only, 6 to 10 people got a card. Well, if there's 50 people, you have to grab a program, and that might check off, 10 people on the team for, hey, I have a program with their name in the lineup. Okay, I see.
And
Good for
to and
you.
one of the toughest seasons, to be completely honest, is 1987, the strike season, because so many of those guys only played 2 to 3 games in the NFL. Those programs have been a big help to getting those names, but they just don't have cards.
Interesting. Wouldn't have thought of that.
I was going to say that the 82 seasons got to be, brutal because you got, basically non-players playing for the team. They're, two, three games, they're done, and that's it. And they're gone forever. And then there was not a lot of big publicity of those players in the NFL at the same time, so they didn't give them the credit that they should have been given by crossing the picket line and playing type of thing,
And there certainly were a lot of good players. If you look at their college stats, some of those guys were good athletes. They just couldn't make it in the NFL. But when they get the opportunity to play, of course you're going to go do it. You're gonna go say that you played in the NFL for three games. I certainly would.
Definitely, definitely. So that's a key to your run at the same time also. And again, you're looking at also non-card items. What do you feel about ticket stubs more so than programs as far as the players playing? And how do you come up with, let's say, for Joe Smith, who only played three games, but he was in these three games, he has no information in the programs. How do you view the ticket stub?
So, admittedly, I don't have any ticket stubs that represent anything right now. But what I did is I just reached into my little box here. I actually just got this in the mail today. To that point of guys that only played like one game, how do you represent them? This is a 1957 program between the Steelers and Washington. And in this game is the only game that a tackle by the name of Jerry Leahy or Leahy ever played in the NFL. He played one game for the Steelers. And it'll be tough to see on screen here, but he is listed on this roster in this game. So one game in 1957, and of course it's tough to track down those games. But I will frantically look through eBay, being like, okay, is he in this program? Is he not in this one? But that part of it makes it all worth it because this guy is just as much an NFL player as anybody else. So I think it's important to preserve their history.
How long did it take you to put that database together? And is the Steelers franchise? I'm curious. Sometimes us fans know more about the team history than the team.
Oh,
Because
definitely.
Bob and I've talked about it. The NFL does a poor job of recognizing its history, and sometimes teams do. I mean, that's very comprehensive.
Honestly, it probably took about, I would say, a month to get everything in order the way that I wanted it to. And then I later discovered that the Steelers actually keep the media guide of their all-time roster. So then I cross-referenced my list of everybody who played a game for the Steelers and actually found that there are about 15 players missing from
On
their,
your list or theirs?
or from theirs,
Oh,
from
from
their list.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this. I don't know. This kind of feels disingenuous because these guys played here, whether it's one game or 15 seasons. They all are Steelers, and the same for any franchise. If you have an opportunity to play, you played in the NFL.
Did you let them know? That is so, see, that makes the point exactly. You
Right.
as a fan in a month put together a more comprehensive database than the NFL team did. So, I mean, did you let them know, and what was their response?
So I did not let him know. I should because I would love to
Sure.
work on that media guide and get some more information in there and be more comprehensive with it.
Yeah, you definitely should contact them because they may be very happy to realize that, we do have some we overlook these players and we'll include them in their next media guide. And again, I was going to say, a good NFL media guide, and most teams do it, do have a comprehensive all-time roster that you're going to use, like Joe in your case with Seattle, even though it is a lot later of a team.
Yes, totally. A lot easier.
Players, but like a Steelers, a Packers, a New York Giants, Chicago Cardinals, so on and so forth. I mean, you're looking at thousands of players, and it is well over 1,600 players, in some cases even more, especially if the team started in 1921. So it's there's a lot of players to look at and a lot of players to view. Ryan, I urge you to contact the Steelers and give them the information. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Because the Steelers is a good or they're a good organization from what I've heard and from other guys I've dealt with both in the game and in the hobby. And they would probably appreciate their
Ryan, there is a wealth of knowledge on vintage football chat. I mean, on VFC. I mean, if you pinged, I mean, I'm sure there's someone there who knows someone at the Steelers high up. I mean, I'm constantly impressed with, you know, who knows who in the NFL and, you know, in teams. I mean, gosh, you know, yeah, I'm sure Bob's gone hot tubbing with a few executives at Green Bay. So, I mean, he's probably got some cell phone numbers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I would definitely urge you to get into that and let them know. So let's just move to the side a little here and let's start looking at your collection if we can.
Yeah.
So I want to show you guys a few things first, because as our Packers and Seahawks fans, I had to make sure that I took care of you guys in the collection. So we're going to go a little bit farther back with the Packers, an item that I'm sure you guys will recognize being VFC members. This is a 1933 Diamond Matchbook of Hank Bruder with the Packers. I played one season for the Steelers in 1939, so I had to go and find a guy who only played one season. But well worth it, and a great Packer and a champion with the Packers.
Yeah.
And then for you, Joe, a legendary Seahawk that I don't know if a lot of people know he played for Pittsburgh, was actually drafted by Pittsburgh, is Dave Brown.
Yeah.
So Dave Brown, 1975, drafted first round.
Yep. And then, I love that 1980 football set. That is one of my favorite sets with the football down there. I did know that. Yeah. And I know it because you're cross-referencing with my Joe quiz a little later, but yeah, you're on the right track. I like it.
Oh, good. Good. I'm sorry that I'm getting ahead of it, but I'm glad that I'm glad that
you're doing great. We're both students of the hobby here, aren't we?
So I'll ask you guys here first, because I do have a few other items. I have three memorabilia items and three cards. What do you want to see first?
Let's go with the cards, and then we'll look at the other pieces.
All right.
I was going to say memorabilia, but it's Bob's show. Let's go.
One time.
We'll start in good end. That's perfectly fine. We'll start in good. There is no problem with that. So my first one here that I want to show is a set that's recognizable to vintage collectors, but it's a 1935 short print of Armand Nicolai from the National Teakle set. And the reason that I love this one is a couple reasons. Number one, it's a short print of the set, so it's very difficult to find. I know that a lot of the folks know that. But Nicolai is one of the forgotten great Steelers of history.
Yeah.
Nicolai played from 1934 to 1942, was one of the first true specialists of the game. Played tackle and was also a kicker. Two times was voted UPI second team All-Pro and was a four-time team leader in scoring. Back when kickers were not typically your team leaders in scoring, it was usually a back who was scoring touchdowns and then also kicking extra points. But Nicolai was a kicker by trade, and that's what helped him lead the team. I feel like I'm leading this charge to get him elected to the Steelers Hall of Honor. I hope one day we can finally see that, but I definitely love his card as part of my collection.
That's a great card. You'd flash a chickle with those throwback Bumblebee jerseys. Maybe I'm preempting you, but you know, and I love that Pitt played, you know, what was it, a game or a couple games in those throwback jerseys?
Couple seasons. I know they had a couple games over a couple seasons.
Yeah.
And we have a throwback drop coming on Monday too. So we'll see what that looks like.
Did they play in those jerseys and then auction them off for charity? Was that what? Anyways, I apologize. I'm sidebarring. Keep
no, trucking. Listen, there's always, I'm never sad to talk about the Steelers. I know that might be a sore subject sometimes with the Seahawks, but that's okay. But yeah, I know that they had them. I think up until about 2015-16 is when they got rid of them.
They were doing, if memory serves me correctly, they were doing one game a season, and then there was some sort of charity event with the jerseys afterwards and the helmets. And I'm not exactly sure, you know, what charity or whatever the case might be. And I know then they stopped it, for a while, and then they came back with her. But again, it's all marketing of the NFL. Taking a step back, 35 National Chickle. Just as an aside, if anybody is trying to put that set together right now, I really recommend not waiting anymore, because I really don't think in any way, shape, or form those cards are going to be going down in value, especially if you can pick them up raw. I really believe the Chickle is fast becoming our T206 set for the hobby, more so than the 1894 Mayos, more so than the Shotwells. I just believe there's just something magical about the 35 Chickle that collectors are just diving into and collecting, especially with the Rockne card, and actually, obviously, the Bronco card, which is, you know, the pinnacle of the set. So you made a good move whenever you picked it up, because to me, they're, especially the high numbers, are just becoming so rare and so expensive. They're just being priced out of the market one way or the other. And if anything, just as an aside, if you're trying to put together the Mayo set, I think it's a good time right now to put the Mayo set together, because even though it's 2-3 times more what it was than Joe and I were actively bidding and collecting on that set, it's still a good value for something 120, 31 years old right now, you know?
Totally agree. Yeah. All right. Ryan, what's next on the hopper?
Listen, I agree with both of you on that. I'm glad I picked up the Sweet Johnson when I did too.
Yeah.
So my second one here is another set that I'm sure our vintage people will appreciate and like, but this is another one that I'm glad I bought when I did, because it's only gone up in value. Is the 1950 Topps felt back of Ernie Stautner. These cards are so fascinating to me, because I love telling people about them. And I'm like, imagine the size of your thumb and it's a full football card. So that's just one of those weird things that happened in the hobby that we enjoy. And I'm glad that in my Steelers collection, there's been six guys that are actually rookie cards in that set. That I've been able to collect, and of course Stautner being the premier name of Steelers history with that.
Yeah, the texture of those cards raw is pretty cool. That's a cool set.
Yeah, that and that's extremely difficult to find in any condition today.
Yeah,
because again, there were, you know, even back then they weren't widely collected and they weren't widely saved. So the ones that are actually going to the market now, I mean, they're truly, you know, a 75-year-old card. That actually 76-year-old card that you're trying to, you know, collect in relatively good condition. So again, that's a great pickup on your point, your part, Ryan, with regards to getting those. Do you have all six of your steel? Okay.
I do. Yes, I do. And one other fact about that, I don't know if you guys know this, but I actually did the numbers on that set one time, because it was technically a college set. Only 26 guys of the 100 in the set actually played a game in the NFL.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Did not know that.
I did not know that either.
Huh. Well, so it's kind of like the 48 Leaf. It's kind of a half and half. I mean, like the Doak Walker, for example, you know, he's SMU in the 48 Leaf. So some people think the 50 Bowman is his rookie card. The little nuances like that. It's interesting. I did not know that about the feltback.
Yeah, definitely something that I like I said, I wouldn't have known unless I looked it up and actively did all those numbers. But so I'm going to go a little bit more modern with my last cards here. So I have two 2004 Ben Roethlisberger Topps rookie cards.
Okay.
And the reason that I have two of them, this is actually one of my favorite stories of collecting. So I told everybody that I'm from a very small town. I like to say it's the type of town that gets excited when the new Walmart opens. And I think people that know me and know where I'm from would know that to be true. So in fact, a new Walmart opened when I was in third or fourth grade, when Ben Roethlisberger was a rookie. And I went and got packs of cards, and I got two Topps packs. And in both packs, I pulled Ben Roethlisberger rookies.
Oh,
so
wow.
They are forever linked together, and they will never go anywhere. Two packs, two rookies.
Cool.
It's a slippery slope, Ryan. Two turns into 1,000. Watch it.
I gotta up my Roethlisberger game to meet your margin game.
Those are rookie numbers, Ryan. Let's get those up.
I'll get there one day. I gotta get the other almost 200 guys first, and then we'll work on Big Ben.
That's a good looking set. Nice. That's a good looking card.
So this next one here, I'll start the memorabilia here. So I'll start with what it actually is, because this is a little interesting, but it is an original year Steelers item. So this is a 1933 New York Times magazine.
Wow.
And in this magazine, it's the full magazine, is a write-up of the Steelers game versus the Brooklyn Dodgers. So back when they were the Pirates. Okay. And it plays to a 3-3 tie in that game. And it's fascinating. If your listeners or you guys have never went back and read some of the old articles in these, it is fascinating to see, because I'm actually a journalist by trade. So it's interesting to see how different people wrote back then and how they described the game. But in the game write-up is one of my favorite players of Steelers history. His name is Mose Kelch. So Mose Kelch is often considered one of the first, if not the first, true specialist of football history. He was pulled off the sandlots by Art Rooney to play for the original Pirates. So he is the person who kicked that field goal. So that's what counts for him in my collection.
Wow. Cool. And I tell you, old paper like that is just becoming more and more rare.
Totally.
In especially in nice condition, because you know people are not saving it, they're not collecting it, and I'm very concerned in preserving history that we're getting rid of a lot of paper ephemera that really needs to be preserved more than anything else. So that's a great pickup.
I agree with you, Ryan. I love looking at the old advertisements in there, like people smoking and drinking, and
yes,
it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yes, the programs and papers alike have a lot of that, and it's so interesting. There's like plane tickets in here for sale, and it's like fly cross country for $25. Can we bring that back?
Yeah. Yeah. The plane did 120 miles an hour and didn't pressurize though. So yeah, you're kind of taking your life in your own hands then.
So I'll move on here to my next to last item. So this is a 1941 program that features Art Jones of the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is a game between the Steelers and Eagles from 41. And why I find this one special is in 1941 was the Pennsylvania Polka, where the Steelers and Eagles changed hands a few times with ownership. It's the only time that the Steelers were not consecutively owned by the Rooneys, which led to Burt Bell being a part of the Steelers. And he coached the first two games of the season for the Steelers before he took a more administrative role.
Yeah.
This is one of the two games Burt Bell coached for the Steelers in 1941. He's listed as the coach in this program.
Wow.
I actually didn't know the Rooneys had a gap there of not owning it. I didn't know that. I thought it had been in their hands perpetuity.
Very briefly. So I think the way that it's described, and if somebody knows better than me, please jump in. But the way that it's described is because it was kind of an off-season handshake agreement, there was it's not necessarily NFL record that they were not owning the team for like a very brief period. So they went to an investor by the name of Alexis Thompson, I believe is his name, with the Eagles. And then they traded back. They shared some stakes. I don't know all the numbers, but that's like the one short period where it was not the Rooneys.
Wow. Now, my understanding was because of the war, there was something going on which forced the Rooneys to want to do that. Again, that's pure speculation on my part from what I've heard over the years, and I have no idea how true or not true that would be. I don't know if Ryan, if you ever heard that information one way or the other.
I have not, but it's not to say it's not true, because it would absolutely make sense for 1941, end of 1940 to 1941.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
One other thing with this program that I think all of our fans will appreciate here. One page in this book actually features all of the Steelers' upcoming matchups. And I know it's a little bit hard maybe to see all the players there, but That's some of the cool. people that are listed just for our listeners' purposes, Tuffy Lehman, Sammy Ball, Ace Parker, Coach Jock Sutherland, who had actually come to coach the Steelers, Don Hudson, Clark Hinkle, and Cecil Isbell. So it's really cool, Bob. To your point, I'm very interested in preserving that print memorabilia because we're not going to see a lot of 1941 advertisements for guys like Don Hudson or Clark Hinkle anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you just rattled off some good names. That's pretty cool. So.
And then I will end with this. Again, we'll go with some names that our folks may recognize a little bit more. One of the toughest items to find, and I don't know if you guys collect these specifically, are the 70s and 80s team sheets.
Yeah.
Those are almost the bane of my existence because they are very tough to track down. But I've been lucky to find a good many of them. So this one, I believe, is from 1978.
Mm. Okay.
And this features guys like Chuck Noll and Terry Bradshaw, Rocky Blyer. But then also down here in the corner under Bradshaw is Tony Dungy for his short time with the Steelers before going to the 49ers and then ultimately becoming a legendary NFL coordinator and coach.
So do you know any history of those actual team-issued photos? Because there's a lot of different There's a lot of different theories about why they were introduced. A lot of them were used for newspapers, so you get a player's head photo in. Mm-hmm. They were also used by the TV stations to get a head photo in. And for whatever reason, they didn't print them in a large capacity and a large amount. So for the Steelers, they would send it to maybe 40 stations or whatever. There may have only been a couple hundred of those out. I could be wrong. But in my research over the years, I think they're really limited and they're very difficult. Like you say, they're very difficult to come by to try to find any of those.
And I've been so lucky to find, I get excited when I find just one sheet. I don't even need the full team.
Okay.
One sheet of a guy that features a player who played for one season. So excited to find that. In my collection, I have a couple other teams just because guys are featured on there. And I even have a USFL one where a guy originally played with the USFL and then came to the Steelers.
Okay.
So it's you just got to find what you can.
Yeah.
Very cool. Right on. Okay. Do you have any really fun collecting stories? I mean, just half of the fun when we talk to guests, you know, who are passionate about the hobby and their collecting is, you know, some of this esoteric stuff is very hard to track down. So when you find it, you'll move heaven and earth to get it. You know, meeting someone, in a Walmart parking lot at midnight to exchange cash for whatever. Do you have any fun stories locked and loaded?
I like you, Joe, and probably fell victim to my most toxic relationship, which is eBay. That has been a very big part of my collecting.
Yeah.
Love hate. One that I can tell you with a friend of mine recently is he actually found in a collection that he purchased for a very, I don't know any of the details as far as money. So I can't get into that. I can't speak to that. In a collection actually found a Len Dawson rookie card. And that was the last standard issue rookie card I needed for my Steelers collection. Of all the Tops and Fleers and Bowmans and Leafs, that is the last one that I needed. And he found one in a collection that he purchased with his shop. And he said, because we've been friends with this for about 5 years now going through this. He said, send me your address. Don't ask questions. It's going to be in your mailbox.
That's cool.
And I'm very grateful for social media and for VFC just to make those connections with people. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to be on this podcast with you all. I would have not met other people that I've met online and in person now. But it is funny whenever I go to shows and people are like, wait, aren't you 304 collect? I'm like, I can't believe that you see something online and, you know, like that just feels weird that people know who you are.
Yeah,
but they do.
I'm saying not a month goes by. I don't get a text or an email from someone. Hey, did you see this, this auction? I mean, and half the times I've seen it and the other half, I'm like, thank you.
Yes.
And just, you know, and just putting it out there that what you collect and what you're passionate about and just the cool people, the hobby will ping you. It's amazing.
And admittedly, Joe, I was very scared about that. You know, the first, 15 years of my collecting journey, I was very scared because I thought people would actively try to go against me. And I know there are people that collect similar things, but what I've learned is exactly what you said. If we help each other out, those good things will come. I have friends that are Steelers collectors. When I've bought some of these team sheets, I get extras. So really, in my opinion, it's my duty to send them along to somebody else because I don't need everything. I just need what I need, and I want other people to have too.
Totally agree.
I agree 100%. I mean, that's the nice part about the hobby, you know, especially when you meet people who are friendly and they share information with you and they share their collection with you, so on and so forth. For example, what Joe sent me this past month. But, you know, but seriously, you know, over the years, I've sent guys stuff. Guys have sent me stuff. And, you know, there was never a dime passed between the two of us. We have the unwritten, you know, the unwritten and unspoken word, you know, we help our collectors out. That's, you know, if I ever came across something for Largent that, you know, I knew Joe didn't have, which is impossible, you know.
Well, Bob, when you move from the Wallingford compound, you know, I mean, I think half of us collectors got little care packages from Swick Enterprises, you know, filled with, you know, books and programs and stuff. And I just remember going through them and like, okay, that's cool. The smell of old paper permeated from the box. It was pretty awesome.
You know, that's the fun part of the hobby, you know. Absolutely. And think back to when you're a little kid. Can you imagine when you got something for nothing, you know, that, you know, someone gave to you? And to me, I think collecting realistically in the part of, especially like a VFC or our whole football community, you know, the fun part of it is getting something that you didn't expect you were going to get, and that there's nothing, you have no hand, what's the word? You're not tied that you have to repay the person for it. Hey, just enjoy it, you know, and that's it. It's done. That type of situation. That's great.
Bob, you want me to do my quick quiz before you wrap up with Ryan?
We're going to move into your quiz there, and then we're going to.
Perfect. All right, Ryan. These are fun. Bob and I've called these Joe quizzes, and it's usually when we get a fun collector on that I feel I can pop these up. Answer with your heart, honest, quick. I mean, it's the way it goes. So I'm just going to throw some things out, and you're going to tell me your opinion.
Okay.
Franco Harris, Steeler burnout or Seattle Seahawks Hall of Fame running back?
Oh, I will say, I'll say this, as much as we claim Franco in Pittsburgh, some of those more modern patch cards with his blue and white jersey, very, very cool.
Let me see what the answer is. You are correct. Yeah, Seahawks Hall of Famer. He played, I didn't know this, but he played 8 games with the Seahawks. 68 rushes, 170 yards. So he definitely did some stat padding when you running the rock for the Seahawks.
Those are Jerome Bettis numbers, not Franco Harris numbers.
Joe, since you're the Seahawk expert, 60 seconds or less, why did he go with this, of all teams, to the Seahawks? You got any background on that? Or
there were a couple of old players that went to the Seahawks to kind of die. And this was before, you know, it was kosher to do that. I remember a Carl Eller, the 1980, you know, Dave Brownie popped up. Carl Eller has a 19 card. And I remember I'm like, oh, okay. And you flip it over, you're like, boy, he spent a lot of time with the Vikings. Even back then, football was a business and you got released at some point. I don't know who got drafted, but at some point, Franco Harris got released. And it's sad to see. So I don't know, but obviously, you know, Franco putting up 170 yards for the Seahawks in a season, you know, we thank him for his service. and I looked this up too. There were, you know, two obvious Seahawks that went on to play for the Steelers. Franco Harris was one, and Danger Russ Wilson is the other. Mm-hmm. So Danger Russ Wilson, Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl winning quarterback, or I'm going to word this weird. Or is it the Denver Broncos saying, hold my beer, when the Vikings got Herschel Walker from the Cowboys basically it was, I mean, because the Broncos traded a lot for old Danger Russ. And then 2 years later, let him go. And the Steelers said, we'll take Danger Russ for $1.2 million. Thank you. So Danger Russ, Seattle Seahawk Super Bowl winning Hall of Fame quarterback, or has been hold my clipboard, Pittsburgh Steeler bust.
I'm going to go with future New York Giants legend. But I will say you can absolutely have Russ. Seahawk through and through.
Yep.
No doubt.
Your connection broke up there when you said something about the Giants. I didn't quite catch it. We're going to go with Seahawks Super Bowl winning quarterback. And I love that you looked up Dave Brown, because before the show, I was like, I want to have fun with players who played for both teams. And I'll just move through these quickly. Steve August was one of the Seahawks' first draft picks. I didn't know this also. He was 6'5", 270. 6'5", well, I go between 280 and 275. Depends on where I'm at. Seahawks from 77 to 84, and he played for Pittsburgh for 84. And I know Steve August because there's a 1976 Fred Meyer card, which is a little local set, and he's in that set. So he was one of the original Seahawks, and he went on to, you know, wallow in mediocrity at Pittsburgh in 1984. John L. Williams was one of my favorite running backs. Seattle 86 to 93. John L. was just that guy. Not huge numbers. I don't even know if he ever hit 1,000 yards, but just great. Classy guy. Seahawks 86 to 93. So I had a couple years where I was watching him play, and then Pitt, you know, like you said, went there, you know, probably lost a bet and went to Pittsburgh for 94 and 95. So, yeah, that's about it. That's it. So you did well. Not bad.
I got one more for you, 'cause I think this is a guy that you might be aware of. What about Dave Williams?
No, I'm not. No.
So Dave Williams, if my memory serves me correctly, Dave Williams was a receiver for the Cardinals in the 60s, where he's definitely most known. He played very briefly for the Steelers. And then I believe, I hope I'm right on this, he was the first player that the Seattle Seahawks ever signed, but he never played for them.
Wow. Okay. I did a quick Google search, players who played for both, and there happens to be fellow nerds like us who have compiled databases of this stuff, and I'm like constantly impressed with what the interweb harvests. And I was looking for people that would be recognizable, not, you know, little fringes, but that's kind of cool. I like that. Good for you.
Yeah, so I'll have to confirm that. I really hope that's right, but it's definitely interesting thinking of this is the first guy who ever played, and it's or first guy signed, rather.
Yeah.
For both expansions, for both the Bucks and the Seahawks, they signed a lot of guys that never did.
They did. Well, Leroy Selman, I think there was a coin flip for who got first draft, and the Bucks in the expansion, they took Leroy Selman, and we took Steve Niehaus, our center. And then I think in the second round, we got the first pick, and they got this, and the Buccaneers got the second. So I think in the second round, it flipped. So,
Ryan, one quick question. Any advice for a beginning collector?
I think it's very simple for me. Two words, enjoy it. Because at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're just collecting. We're having fun. We're honoring the players and teams, whatever it is that we enjoy. We're enjoying it through these pieces of cardboard, through these publications. Find what you love and just enjoy it. Don't get too wrapped up in money. I've told people for years I'm not money motivated, unfortunately. I've got offers on cards that I just can't sell. Yeah. So my advice is just simply enjoy it.
That's great advice. And you know, Joe and I also believe that philosophy too. And, you know, I kid a lot of guys because at night you know, other people watch TV or whatever, I pull out an old program or old football magazine or whatever, and I read it. And I'm reading the history of the game, and it's cool. Now that I'm semi-retired, I spend like an hour or two a day up here in my man caves upstairs in the house. And I'm going through cards, and I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. It's just a lot of fun. Brings back a lot of great memories. I got a few years on both of you guys, so a hobby for a long time, and it's really evolved dramatically. But don't get me started on Pokemon, because that's a sore subject with me right now, as you can tell from VFC. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Ryan, we're almost out of time. Any final thoughts? What an incredible collection you got.
I just appreciate you guys having me on. It's so fun to be able to meet other folks who have such passionate interest with teams and players, and just preserving that legacy of football. Because one of my biggest complaints is I always say that I don't feel we tell history correctly. There's a lot of gaps in history that teams and the league won't tell. And I think it's our job to tell those stories. So whether it's the Steelers, whether it's the Packers or Seahawks, there's a lot of room for what we can fill in for those teams and those players.
I agree 100%. Well, Ryan, thank you.
Very well said, Ryan. Thank you.
Thank you for being on. Joe, we're really strapped for time. I'm going to hand off to you our 2-minute warning. What'd you pick up on tonight, Joe?
When we have a kick-ass guest, it's hard not to bump up against the 2-minute time limit. Ryan, Bob and I have been doing this a long time, and we like asking that question. What advice would you give to collectors? And we've found the classy ones say, you know, don't do it for the money, do it for the passion, do it for the fun, you know, some variation of that. So I always admire it when people have that recognition of that, you know, it's a hobby. Yes, you're putting hard-earned money and sweat into it, but at the end of the day, it should be fun. And meeting people and having fun. And I remember my first national meeting people, and it's just, it's gone on from there. I adore it. So good answer, man.
Yeah, excellent answer, Ryan. And, you know, you got a great collection. I love reading it on VFC, even though I'm not posting every 2 seconds, you know, so on and so forth. I have been following what you have. It's just great. I love reading it. I love reading about the history of the game, and I love passion from another collector in the hobby. We need a lot more of that for our hobby to survive. And I'll keep it, and I'll close with that. So thanks for being on. Joe, thanks for being back. Hopefully we're going to have a show next week. As I jockey for guests here and trying to get time, so on and so forth, hopefully we'll be back next week with another show. Again, if you're not subscribed to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for? Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. That's all we have. Thanks for being on, and we'll be back. Take care.
Hey there. Welcome to Music Meets Sports, where sports legends meet custom soundtracks and unforgettable stories come to life through music. I'm Sean, the marketing director. Music Meets Sports was created by music producer Ronald Tyke Oliver to bridge generations, educate fans, and celebrate the greatness of both current and former athletes. We craft original songs about heroes in basketball, football, baseball, boxing, and beyond, highlighting their early struggles and personal battles, their faith, character, and drive, their inspiring victories on and off the field. Across genres, hip-hop, R&B, rock, pop, even country, we reintroduce fans to their favorite athletes in a way they've never heard before. From Babe Ruth to Reggie White, from rising WNBA stars to timeless NFL greats, we give legends their flowers in full surround sound. Stream or download our music now on Apple Music, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Visit musicmeetsports.org to explore the catalog, hear new releases, and join the movement that's preserving sports history, one song at a time. And be sure to follow us on Instagram and Music Meets Sports. That's sports with a Z. Music Meets Sports, the raw energy of sports, the emotional depth of music.